Yeah,
we'll just say
the adult name.
Okay.
All right, so can you guys introduce yourselves then? If you want to use your real names, that's cool. If you don't want to use them, that's also cool. So whatever you guys want to do.
I'm Brian Sultana.
I'm Robin Wood.
I'm Connie Fiorella Cerdonquiros Fitzpatrick.
So it seems like a lot of the resistance is connected to folks at the Haskell Indian Nations University. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the university, maybe a little bit about the history of the university, and maybe you could tie that in a little bit to the resistance that's happening now on the wetlands.
Okay, well, in 1884, 127 years ago, Haskell was opened as an assimilation school to take the Native American culture and westernize it, teaching them Western methods of agriculture, teaching them, teaching the men and women how to fall into Western roles of men and women, you know, and teaching the men how to garden and the women how to work in a kitchen, which is non-traditional at all. It's actually antithetical to traditional beliefs. From there, the wetlands became up. For 50 plus years, they use it for farming. But also the students would kind of, whenever students often would break out of the school, because essentially it was like a prison, so they would break out and sneak back into the wetlands and kind of, it was like, oh, there's some woods, there's nature, it's where we can go do whatever ceremony, whichever tribe wanted to do, or even if it was just something simple to go out and talk in their own language, because they weren't allowed to talk in their language at Haskell. Or perhaps to go out and collect some sort of traditional food or tea or medicine that they thought they needed or they wanted because they were tired of being fed shit that the school fed them.
What's the involvement of the students at Haskell in the wetlands defense?
So 20 years ago, the Wetlands Preservation Organization began, which is a student-led organization that filed the first lawsuit against the deconstruction of the SLT, which is the South Orange Traffic Way, which is the highway that's going through the wetlands. The last appeal that they were trying to take against it lost last October. Or was it June?
June 2012.
June 2012, yeah. That's when the court case was over.
It had to be appealed to the Supreme Court to get any higher.
So for 20 years, different groups of folks have been involved in more or less legal struggles. Up until now?
Up until last summer 2012.
Okay, so the most recent appeal got rejected, and so since then it seems like things have accelerated. What's the current state of the project and the current state of organizing against it?
So the construction of the highway is in preliminary stages right now. The Department of Transportation and the construction company they hired have said they'll begin sometime this fall. It's been kind of a moving date. They had preliminary clearing in the area, but haven't gotten to the stage of like actual construction, which is more what people are paying attention to, because they've kind of come in and out with clearing equipment and not really setting anything up at this point. So it's still in preliminary stages, but there are severe areas of clearing at this point, just to make way for new power lines that'll go along the highway, a hiking and bike trail that'll go next to the highway. They're also going to realign another road and expand it next to the highway. They set now potentially November of this year to start construction, but they're kind of moving around where they're going to start it. They, from a local, an article in the local paper just today, I think, it seems like they might have shifted where they're going to start construction from the wetlands to somewhere else, but they're still unclear on that. And there was a little bit of construction, outside of the wetlands, That's another issue of, you know, it's not really clearing, but just kind of making preparation for the larger construction of the highway. So clearing out certain areas, digging around, just setting everything up.
And what about the folks who are involved in the defense?
I think we've kind of had to get creative here, because people will ask the question in very specific terms, not just in terms of like what do we do or what can we do now, but okay, is this issue, is it a done deal? Is it over? Is the highway going through? It's like, well, I mean, you know the details as well as us. And what can we say? It seems all signs point in that direction in terms of, you know, the official decision makers saying, yes, this is what's going to happen. So what do we do about it? It still gets back to the question, because people either like give up and say, okay, well, it's over. I think what we've done is work to organize the people who are passionate about this issue, not just for the future, maybe in protecting the remaining wetlands after construction is over, but taking this as a connected issue from the past, from 20 years ago, you know, throughout this struggle, to now carrying it into the future.
Well, I think that we have tried to give people choices. I mean, we had the Occupy the Wetlands, so that was more of a gathering to bring people that are interested and talk about what we could possibly do. And then we have also made a Facebook, which will be called Voices of the Wetlands, which is focused more in sharing people's stories and how they connect to the Wakarusa Wetlands. So I think that's for people that don't want to do physical action, but I think that sharing the stories still makes a huge difference.
Maybe that's a good way to kind of transition into another question that I wanted to ask you guys, which is maybe to just talk a little bit about the wetlands. Maybe like describe them, you know, what kind of stuff is there? What is the land like? How do you guys experience it? And why is it so important to you?
112 plant species in the wetlands of varying diversity, including forbs, shrubs, trees, grasses, sedges, and various wildflowers. What do we do there? I walk around and I don't know, sometimes I go out there to pray, meditate. Sometimes I go out there to go grocery shopping, aka pick up some badass teas.
Mulberries.
Yeah, we picked a whole bunch of mulberries.
Blackberries.
Stinging nettles, pawpaws, just different foods, stuff like that. It's fun. It's really fun, and it's good, and some of the most nutritious. Wild food is some of the most nutritious food in the world, and it requires the least amount of labor. I don't know, it's a good place to go be alone. It's a good place to release some anger, some sadness. Need something like that. Our swamp is our church. There's a really famous quote that the wetlands, the WWBO used to use, and it's like Thoreau said, or somebody, some one of those old motherfuckers said that, and it's a good quote. Our swamp is our church, and that's why I always really like that.
For me, I would say that it's a place. I mean, I work on my computer. I'm a translator and graphic designer, and I'm on my computer the whole time when I'm working, and when I'm done, I want that to still be there. It's my place for escape and therapy, really. In the summer, we go collecting mulberries and other fruits and plants and even milkweeds, go watch the monarchs, feel at peace, really. I think it's just the most calming thing I could do to my body, and I don't want that to be gone, and I don't want that to be gone for anybody. And I know that a lot of people feel similar to me, so that's why I'm fighting for it. And also, I feel that Haskell is not taken seriously, and I feel like the city has built so many things around it, and it's almost like people just don't see how important it is and how important the people that are there are and how important the culture is. And I feel that a lot of people make fun of how sacred the place, like the land, is to Native Americans and other people that care about it. because it is a sacred place, and a lot of people make fun of that. And I think that that is something really important to stand up for.
There's on the Haskell side of the wetlands, there's like a earthwork. It's like a water bird effigy carved into the grass, which is like a Native American symbol. And that's really cool. That's like on the wetlands, and that's what Haskell has kind of done. There's like 542 acres on this side, and then Haskell owns like 60 acres on this side. But they used to own all 600.
So what happened to the rest of it?
The Land Reclamation Act happened. I forget what year, but the Dawes Act is what it's also called. And it's like the Realotment Act. They took the BIA took all its lands, all its Indian land, all that land was for Indians, sliced it up into pieces on a map, and then sold it. They sold a lot of it.
Got transferred from the BIA to the Department of Interior as surplus land. So kind of in a back and forth of U.S. policy on for indigenous peoples, it goes back and forth from the 1800s when they created boarding schools, assimilation schools, to the 30s when they created reservations and started giving back land, to a reversal again in the 50s and 60s with the Dawes Act.
And so Haskell went from owning fucking all of it, owning, you know, 1% or whatever. And that was due to Raymond Ede Hall, who's actually, I went to school in Berkeley, and then came to KU, and then did all this. So it's actually kind of ironic. It's what we learned that yesterday from our senior member.
So basically a story of people in specific positions getting to know legislators saying, hey, you know what would be really great? We have, once again, this Indian problem. And these lands aren't being maintained the way we want them to. The only way we're really going to be able to take care of these lands is if you hand it over to my institution. Actually,
KBS.
Yeah,
Kansas Biological Survey. And it was under this. The guy actually had good intentions. He was just really misguided. He was also really largely involved in the eugenics movement. But he was also like hand in hand with like land conservation, and he really like was like these wetlands are like really rare and beautiful, and we need to save them, and they're not going to take care of them. We need to give them to us, which is really ironic now. And that's one of the that's the card that we were playing, like that you were given this land for stewardship, not for profit, not for production, and that's because that's exactly what they did. It's like, all right, cool, yeah, we'll take the money for that land so you can build a highway.
There's a sign on Baker's side of the wetlands as you go in that says just that. This is a natural historic landmark. This is used for education, research, and, you know, conservation. You know, it's right going in, and it's part of the area that's going to be taken out by the highway.
So maybe can you talk a little bit about the Occupy the Wetlands thing that you mentioned before?
Yeah. One of the big goals for myself was to connect people, share ideas, get people talking again, and see what comes from that. So we had a weekend-long event there out at the wetlands, because I think that was another big issue, connecting that in people's minds, because a lot had been talked about the wetlands, but it had mostly happened from afar. Or we have WPO, Haskell Wetlands Preservation Organization meetings. They're on Haskell campus, but even then, I think a lot of students don't make their way down to the wetlands. So we had the event there down at the wetlands, and it's in that way it was a little less convenient for people in town getting there. So a lot of people have just it's for convenience and ease not been out there, but it's a really different situation. Being out there, and there are people who are just like, okay, let's get this going. We didn't have a real idea of what the Occupy would look like, and really it was a gathering. It was just talking to people, kind of as a starting point. But there's a difference between saying talking about the idea and saying, you know what would be good? Let's get up to the wetlands sometimes and you know, get together with people and see what happens. And actually being out there and being like, you know, calling people up, being like, hey, are you coming? And then people would show up, and you know, we do different things. A lot of people hadn't been out there in the last month or so, so a lot of the time was spent walking around, seeing what was going on. And that's a lot different than just hearing that construction, you know, preliminary clearing is happening. You can see it in front of you.
How can folks who are listening to the show find out more information about what's going on? You kind of mentioned earlier a Facebook page.
The two sites to look at, the two pages to look at, are Voices of the Wakarusa Wetlands for video and documentation, interviews, kind of the story side of things, and Occupy the Wakarusa Wetlands. We have it as a community page now to keep people together, keep people updated. I think the biggest thing is getting people sharing what's going on.
Is there anything else you all want to say? Any other comment that we haven't touched on that you want to make before we finish?
I think another thing about the wetlands, and it speaks to larger environmental and ecological destruction happening, and the kind of callousness that people as a society take to that is really telling, and it's really in the way of like how things progress. I guess in grade school, a lot of kids, I mean, even in a whitewashed education, we'll hear about, you know, rainforests, you know, and see maps of dwindling rainforest sites. Here's the rainforest over time, tiny. And not really connect that to the way we live or, you know, how we're affecting that. And also think, well, you know, whatever is happening in my own personal life will continue on kind of regardless of what actions are taken to destroy the environment. So things aren't really connected up on that level, and I think it's really important on that level. And it's not thought about. People don't think about causality in that way. But at some, there's a tipping point. You know, things start to fall apart the more you fuck over the environment.